And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, the reaction to Monday Night Football last night. Which teams in the NFL, after a quarter of the season, are we buying on, selling on, or have to hold on after the Raiders got their first loss last night? Plus, in college football, who's the best of the rest? We know the top two teams in college football. Then who comes in at number 3 or even 4 right now? So the one change Clemson can make. Plus, we'll get ready for the baseball postseason, which begins tonight. I got a couple of grievances to air with Major League Baseball. And we'll also get to our Tuesday top 10 power ranking, the 10 best teams. We have 10 playoff teams in Major League Baseball. We will power rank them in terms of who has the best chance of winning the World Series this year as the Atlanta Braves get ready to try to make a run. I'll also let you know where I was right, where I was wrong. We'll catch up with Jared Diamond from the Wall Street Journal to talk about the baseball playoffs coming up. Urban Meyer issued a very uncomfortable apology yesterday. And a whole lot more over the next few hours. With it till 3 on this Tuesday, you can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com. or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can find the latest versions of the show. You can leave a comment for the show, or you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, Joe's on the steel wheels as always. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, it's wet, but I made it here. So if you're out there on 26 coming into town, you know, coming in west or eastbound, excuse me, there was a wreck out there just past Ashley Phosphate earlier. Hopefully it's been cleared up, but you might have some residual effects out there. Mm-hmm. So pack some patience.
All right. Yeah, good luck. And there you go with our weather and traffic right off the top. Yeah, it was nasty out there driving in. It was very odd, though. Leaving my neighborhood, it was pouring, coming down real strong. And then as soon as I turned the corner, you know, then it was kind of sunny and not really raining. And then it started to rain a little more as I continued my drive. Nasty out there. But we have the Major League Baseball postseason beginning tonight. We had Monday Night Football last night. We got a lot to do. Let me start with that game last night with the Chargers getting the win against the Raiders. You know, after a Monday Night Football game about 15 years ago, Dennis Green went to the podium and he slammed on the podium as head coach of the Cardinals and he said they are who we thought they were about the Chicago Bears, who pulled off a 17-point comeback in the second half to beat the Arizona Cardinals that night. And I think after last night, you could say something similar about the Las Vegas Raiders. And they are who we thought they were. That was a big moment for the Raiders. Now, they had already won on Monday Night Football. They got off to a 3-0 start. They were playing well. But last night, Monday Night Football once again, the whole nation watching, they're on the road, even though it felt like a home game against a good Chargers team. We're 3 weeks in. We figure, okay, here's a real good test for this Raiders team. Let's see what we have. And they fell behind 21-0. Now, they made a game of it in the second half, but it's always tough to tell. You know, sometimes the defense relaxes a little bit. You get a little garbage score here or there. And when the Chargers had to turn the burners back on in that fourth quarter when the Raiders were getting close, they were able to handle their business. The Raiders had, 47 yards of offense in the first half for a team that came in with the number one offense in the league. And Staley, head coach of the Chargers, good defensive coach, did a really good job last night. Now, maybe unfair to throw out the first three games of the Raiders because of one potentially just bad performance last night. But I think there's a lot of doubters of the Raiders, and last night was that verification that you watch that game thinking, yeah, this team really isn't as good as their record indicates. We knew these Raiders, they're not as good. They're not one of the best teams in the league. So now, after the quarter point, the first quarter of the season, these 17 games throw everything off, but, you know, you can't get a true quarter of the season now. We're not going to play four games and a quarter. So after four games, let's say we're a quarter of the way through the season. And as we discussed in the show yesterday, you can't really pick a best team in the league. You can make a case for maybe the Cardinals, right now undefeated, or the Buffalo Bills, who have had three straight blowouts. The Buccaneers are the defending Super Bowl champs. They're 3-1 this year. But it's hard to tell. So I figured after last night's win for the Chargers, we'd come in here and start things a little bit differently, run through some of the teams in the NFL, and I'll tell you who I'm buying and selling on and who I would hold right now to start the NFL season here 4 weeks in. Right, the teams that we trust already after four games. The teams that we already don't trust, even if they've gotten off to a good start. And the teams that we need to see a little bit more of after 4 weeks of the NFL season. Now, in the buy category, I do buy the Buffalo Bills. They're 3-1, and they've come off three straight wins by over 20 points, but they have been against bad teams. I would actually maybe like to hold on the Bills to see a little bit more, but I'll buy them. That division is weak. The Bills will win that division. They were in the playoffs a year ago. I do trust the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen needs to play better, but I trust the Bills will be there in the end. I'm buying the Baltimore Ravens and the Cleveland Browns in the AFC North, both at 3-1. The Ravens coming off a nice win against the Broncos on the road. The Browns with a nice road win. The Browns haven't beaten a team yet with a winning record. We're still early in the season. But those are two teams that were in the playoffs a year ago and have looked good so far. I'm buying the Chargers. I was high on the Chargers entering this season. And I think I saw why last night. Their only loss was to the Cowboys in a game they really gave away. Otherwise, they could be 4-0. I think this Chargers team is really good. And if you watched the game last night, I think Justin Herbert is really good. Of course, even at 2-2, you buy the Kansas City Chiefs because of their success the last couple of years, their potential, their ability, and the fact that they have Patrick Mahomes. That defense has not been good enough, but still, as long as you have Patrick Mahomes, he'll make up for a lot of things. I would buy the Chiefs. In the NFC, I am buying on the Cowboys. That division is poor, and Dallas has the makeup of some teams that we've seen in the past have a lot of success. Go back to when the Saints won that Super Bowl in 2009. How did they do it? They did it with a great quarterback in Drew Brees and a defense that got a lot of turnovers. That defense was not towards the tops in the league, but what they were top in the league was forcing turnovers, number one. And the Cowboys now have forced multiple turnovers, and I think it's 9 straight games going back to last year. Dak Prescott is playing really well, so it's a team that can score a lot of points. And the defense isn't great, but it gets turnovers. And that could be a big difference in a game. You win the turnover margin, you typically win that game. Right? We went through offense and how potent it is for defense. They just need a few stops. If you get just a couple of turnovers, that makes all the difference in the world. I am buying Dallas. I'm not telling you they're going to go win a Super Bowl this year, but they are better than I thought they were going to be. I do think they win that division, and they will have a chance to win at least one playoff game this year, if not go further. The defense could potentially get better as the year goes on. I'll buy the Green Bay Packers, but you know the Packers have a negative point differential. They're 3-1, but they've been outscored this year. And it hasn't been pretty when they have won. It took a last-second field goal against the Niners. They were trailing in the second half at home against the Lions. Even this past week against the Steelers. The Steelers are a bad team. That wasn't the prettiest victory. And if it wasn't for a blown call on a blocked field goal, could have been a different game. But there is something to be said for finding a way to still win these games. Aaron Rodgers is great at that. We saw it on Sunday Night Football against San Francisco. So at 3-1 and in that division, and with Aaron Rodgers, I'll buy the Packers. I don't think the Packers may be as good as they were a year ago, but I'll buy them. Much like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the South won the Super Bowl last year, you have Tom Brady, you're 3-1, of course you buy that. Then you get to the NFC West. I'm going to buy on the Rams at 3-1. I think the loss this past week was just a hangover from the win they had against Tampa Bay. I certainly have concerns about Matt Stafford in the biggest games this past Sunday. It wasn't great for him. But I still think the Rams have the best roster in that division. And those are the teams a quarter in that I would buy on. In terms of holding, teams I have to see a little bit more out of. I'm actually going to throw in the Patriots at 1-3. Because the Patriots, much like my Minnesota Vikings, who I would also hold on, are the only two teams with losing records despite having a positive point differential. The Patriots could easily, at minimum, be 500, if not 3-1. If they make that field goal on Sunday, or if Damian Harris doesn't fumble at the 10 against the Dolphins in week one, could be a different start to the season for the Patriots. The difference for teams like that is that they have a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. Mac Jones is a rookie. I think that makes the difference for the Patriots. He's a guy that they're trying to have not lose the game instead of going out there and winning the game. That's why they kicked the field goals on Sunday instead of going for it on 4th and 3. With a different quarterback, you may go for it. And for the Vikings, who are in the same boat, similar idea. Kirk Cousins is good. He's not great. You put Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady in those situations, they're winning those close games, and that team actually is 3-1 like they're supposed to be instead of 1-3. But I'll hold on each of those teams, the Patriots, and then to skip ahead, the Vikings as well. I would hold on the Las Vegas Raiders. Last night notwithstanding, I still want to see a little bit more from the Raiders. They have potential there. They had the number one scoring offense in the league. Their big problem is that they start so slowly in the first half. And it's a tough way to try to get by when you fall behind so frequently. But the other concern for the Raiders is that Gruden's teams always start well and fade in the second half of the seasons. So for the Raiders, I will hold because I want to see a little bit more. Which direction is this team going to go in? And I think we'll find out in the coming weeks. I would also hold on the Arizona Cardinals. Not buying them just yet. I want to hold and see. Big win for the Cardinals on Sunday against the Rams. But for the Cardinals, the concern is that they can't play physical football. Cliff Kingsbury's teams have started hot. Remember last year, I think they were 8-3 or 7-3, and they were one of the wild card teams, and they ended up 500. His teams, much like Gruden, fade the second half of the year. So I'm holding on the Cardinals. An impressive start. They're the last undefeated team remaining in the league. They just blew out the Rams on the road. But I want to see what they can do come November and December. I don't know if the Cardinals will be at the top of that division at year's end. In fact, I don't think they will be. And I'm still holding on the Seahawks and the 49ers. Because when you have Russell Wilson, the guy's never had a losing season. He's always won with less. There's always a chance for Seattle. And San Francisco, Jimmy Garoppolo's injured. They have been out of sync so far the first month of the season. But there's so much talent there. And Kyle Shanahan is a dynamic enough head coach that I think San Francisco will turn this whole thing around. They've gotten off to a bad start. They haven't looked great. They're making mistakes, fumbling at the goal line. Jimmy Garoppolo's injured. Trey Lance has to come in. He hasn't been excellent. But I think the Niners will be okay by year's end. Then we get to the category in which teams I would sell on so far a quarter of the way into the season. I'm selling on the Cincinnati Bengals. They're off to a nice 3-1 start in that division. It's been impressive, but I still don't buy it. I have questions about their head coach, and I have questions about the talent on that roster. The defense has improved this year. Joe Burrow is playing really well. He seems to be healthy. Ja'Marr Chase has erased the concerns about him being unable to catch the football. But at best, I think that roster is third best in the division. And it's just going to be such a tough division. With the Ravens, the Browns, the Steelers will still win a few games. They probably shouldn't along the way. I'm selling on the Bengals. It's been an impressive start to the year, but I don't think anybody anticipated them being a playoff team already this season. In year two of Joe Burrow and with Zach Taylor, still a young coach, learning as he goes. I'm selling on the Tennessee Titans. They may win that division, but that's like being the smartest kid in summer school. It's not saying a whole lot. But the Titans have lost too many pieces from last season's team. Their offensive coordinator, two of their top three wide receivers, and they have the most new starters of any team in the league on defense. There's just too many moving pieces for the Titans to figure it out on the fly. They're fortunate they get to play the Texans, the Colts, the Jaguars 6 times total. They'll get some wins there. But when it comes to the playoffs or competing in the AFC, I don't think the Titans will be able to do it this year. And I also sell in the Denver Broncos, 3-1, but their 3 wins came against teams that entered this past Sunday all without a victory. They beat the 3 worst teams in the league. And then when they were finally challenged on Sunday at home, they lost by multiple scores to the Ravens. They managed only 1 offensive touchdown, and then they were complaining after the game about the Ravens not taking knees at the end. Now, that's where the Broncos are. They're all upset about the Ravens right now. Now, they got a lot of noise going on in Denver. Their quarterback has a concussion. They just lost the first big game they've had of the season, and that's the big concern for the Broncos, being unable to score points. In the NFC, I would sell on the Washington football team. I thought they would take a step back this year. I just didn't know it would be this big of a step defensively. They've gone from a top 5 defense to a bottom 5 defense. I mean, even against the Falcons this past Sunday, did not look good. And while Taylor Heineke is a good backup quarterback, right, backup quarterbacks usually have a ceiling, where they'll be good for you for about 4 or 5 games if they have to fill in, but they're not good for you if you have to run with them for the length of the season. And between Heineke and Fitzpatrick, I just don't think the Washington football team will get enough out of the quarterback to make up for this defense if it continues to play like this. The Washington football team has been outscored by 3 touchdowns so far this year despite their 500 record. And I would also sell, unfortunately, both the Carolina Panthers and the New Orleans Saints. That week one against the Packers, a little flukish for the Saints. They've returned to earth the last couple of weeks. And they're a team that struggles to move the football. The defense is really good. But that offense is not dynamic enough. I think it holds the Saints back. And the Panthers, while I think they'll have a good year this season, I thought they were a little exposed this past week against the Cowboys. Without Christian McCaffrey, we'll see how long he's out for, but you saw that the offensive line didn't look quite as good for the Panthers. Sam Darnold turned over the football. The Panthers had to play from behind. They fell behind in the second half and couldn't quite catch up. Went on the road to take on a good Cowboys team, and at a certain point there, they were down three scores in the second half. They'll be a good team. They'll have a good season. They'll be around 500, but as I've been saying the last couple of weeks, Matt Rhule is that third-year guy. The second year is a good season around 500. The third year is where he really takes off, and I think he'll be similar this year. He continues to climb that ladder season by season. Last year, they won five games. This year, they'll be better and around 500. Next year will be the year where the Panthers could be a playoff team. I would sell on Carolina. Doesn't mean it's a bad thing. Just I don't think there's some sort of team that will compete for the NFC this year, despite the 3-0 start and now 3-1. Teams I would buy, sell, and hold on a month into the season. Certain teams I have to wait on more information. Other teams I don't buy into the hot start. And most teams I still trust. I'm not going to change my impressions after a month. The Chiefs' defense has not been good. That's okay. They'll be there in year's end. I don't know if they'll win the Super Bowl, but I do think the Chiefs will still be a playoff team this year and one of the best teams in the AFC. And I still trust the Buccaneers, even if they have played a couple of close games lately and they can't run the football and that secondary's been getting picked on. They still have Tom Brady. They won the Super Bowl last year. I think the Buccaneers will be just fine, much like the Rams and a lot of these other teams that I'm buying here a month into the season. Along those same lines, when it comes to college football, who are you buying outside of Georgia and Alabama? When we come back, who's the best of the rest in college football? Because we know the top two teams reside in the SEC. But after that, who's number three? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This magic moment, so different and so new, was like any other until I kiss you, and then it happened. It took me by surprise. I knew that you felt it too.
Coming up, who's the best of the rest in college football? We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Can't hear this song and not think of the classic Sandlot. It's a big day in baseball at the playoffs beginning tonight. My anxiety has already begun with the Red Sox and the Yankees in a one-game wild card. I got my Red Sox gear on today. We're good to go. Coming up later on this afternoon, we'll power rank the playoff teams in Major League Baseball. How good of a chance do the Braves have of making a run in the NL? Get to that later on. And preview the postseason with Jared Diamond in the final hour today. This song was also used in an episode of The Sopranos. They came out with that movie this past weekend. I haven't gotten into it yet, but I have heard almost nothing but bad things about the movie. I'll watch it at some point, but maybe I'm not in as big of a rush as I originally was going to be. I instead watched The Guilty on Netflix with Jake Gyllenhaal. What a ridiculous movie that was. Now, Gyllenhaal's great. I'll watch anything he's in. But a pretty absurd movie. I chose that instead of watching the new Sopranos film. We'll get to that at some point. When it comes to college football, we opened the show today talking about NFL teams that would buy, sell, or hold on here a month into the season. What about in college football? Because we know the top two teams in college football, Georgia and Alabama, and I would put them in that order. I think Georgia deserves to be number one right now. They have shut out back-to-back opponents for the first time since 1980. They have the number one defense statistically in the country, and not just statistically, but also if you watch them. Right, they passed the eye test. They've been winning without their starting quarterback. They've been dominant. They have the best side of football between them and Alabama. They've allowed only one touchdown all year, and it was in garbage time on a shorter field against the Gamecocks. So there's a feather in your cap, South Carolina. Georgia's the number one team. Alabama's number two right now. But then who is number three? They asked this question on ESPN SportsCenter and then put out a poll. And the four teams they included were Cincinnati, Iowa, Penn State, and Oklahoma. And the votes, 30,000 of them, picked Cincinnati number one. Cincinnati is the third best team in college football right now. And I appreciate the support for a Power 5 program. I don't agree. Iowa was number two in this poll. And then Penn State, and then far down was Oklahoma. Those other three teams all got between 28 and 31% of the vote, so it was very close. Oklahoma checked in on just 11% of the vote. When it comes to odds, Alabama and Georgia are the heavy favorites. They remain the favorites to win the national championship this year at plus 175. But you know who is still third? How about Ohio State has the third best odds still, followed by Oklahoma. And then you actually have Michigan next, followed by Iowa, Texas, Penn State, and Cincinnati all have 40-1 odds. And then I saw this online as well when it comes to the playoff odds. So in the ACC, Clemson still has a 2% chance of making the playoff, which is the highest in the ACC. And we got into this a little bit yesterday, but it's really down to two conferences in college football because the ACC is in big trouble. Clemson still has the best chance, and yet it's only a 2% chance that the ACC gets a team in the playoff. Cincinnati has a 13% chance of making the playoff as a Power 5. In the SEC, you obviously have Georgia and Alabama. In fact, the SEC and the Big Ten both have better odds or a higher percentage chance of getting multiple teams in the playoff than the ACC has of just getting one. And the Pac-12 has of just getting one team. It's going to come down to those two. In the Big 12, Oklahoma has a 39% chance of making the playoff. Next would be Oklahoma State at only 4%. So right now, the Big 12's chances are really riding on Oklahoma, who has to play Texas this week. That's a big one. And Oklahoma, who has just a +23 point differential against FBS schools, they have been just barely getting by. And then when you look at the Big Ten, this is what is still surprising me. When you look at the playoff odds in the Big Ten, Penn State has the best odds based off of this computer model, ESPN's FPI. Penn State has a 47% chance of making the playoff. Next on the list is Ohio State. Third from the Big Ten, Michigan. Fourth from the Big Ten, Michigan State. And fifth from the Big Ten is Iowa, who has the greatest odds for the Big Ten West. But the top four teams in the East all have a higher percentage chance of making the playoff, according to this model, than Iowa does. Only 11% chance for Iowa, behind Cincinnati, far behind Oklahoma, far behind Penn State and Ohio State. Now, we'll get a lot of clarity on this come Saturday. Saturday is when Penn State and Iowa face one another. So you'll knock one off. Right, Penn State may have a lot better odds right now to make the playoff than Iowa. If Iowa wins on Saturday, that could change drastically. But I do think Iowa is that next best team in college football behind the other two. Because as good as Georgia's defense is, Iowa is right behind them. Georgia is number one in the country in stop rate in terms of how often they stop their opponent from scoring. They have allowed only one touchdown all year. Georgia is number one. They have been the most effective defense in college football this year. There's no surprise there. But you know who is number two? It's Iowa. Iowa was actually number one last year. They're number two this year, right behind Georgia. You can make the strong case that based off of performance, Iowa is the best defense in the country over the last 2 years. Plus, a veteran head coach who has had success before, and Iowa has won 11 straight games, 10 of which were against Power 5 schools. When they had that number one defense last year, it was also without the boost of any non-conference games. And in those 11 straight victories, 7 of them are by over 20 points. I do think Iowa is the third best team in college football. Can they compete with Georgia or Alabama? I'm not so sure. But I do think they have done enough over really the last 2 years to be in that conversation, to be slotted number three. I appreciate the love for Cincinnati and the power and the group of five. And Cincinnati's a good program as well. But I don't think they match up with Iowa. Iowa's defense is better, and Iowa is more tested with their schedule playing in the Big Ten than Cincinnati, who gets to play in the AAC and then, you know, sneaks a couple of games in there against Notre Dame and an Indiana. Two really good wins. But you're not going through that every week. That helps. Penn State, I think, loses to Iowa on Saturday. That's why I put Penn State behind Iowa. And then Oklahoma, I also think, may lose to Texas on Saturday. But statistically, it's been the worst offense they've had since Lincoln Riley has arrived. The fans are cheering for the backup quarterback, and they've played a lot of close games. Whereas for Iowa, as I said, 7 of their last 11 wins have been by over 20 points. Friday night, we thought they'd get tested on the road against an undefeated Maryland team. Short week. Now, they beat them by over 30, forced like 6 turnovers in that game. Iowa, I will continue to say, at the beginning of the season, I said they're the best team no one's talking about. Now we're at least including them. But they're still not getting enough respect. So I've amended it. And now I believe Iowa is the best team that we're not talking enough about. And when you look at the Big Ten odds, again, to put Iowa 5th in their own conference, they're the number 3 team in the country. So this must not be a hot take for me to say they are the 3rd best team in college football. Except I look around and I see 30,000 votes, and they're not picking Iowa as that 3rd best team. They're picking Cincinnati instead. Or I look at the playoff odds, and the computer model is not picking Iowa to come out of the Big Ten this year. In fact, they only put them 5th in the Big Ten. And I don't really understand it. I think the voters actually did get this one right. I think Iowa is the 3rd best team in the country. I think they'll get a chance to show it Saturday if they can knock off Penn State at home. And I think that defense is so good, right? And they've been so dominant blowing teams out. I do think Iowa is the best team outside of the SEC. Now, when it comes to their schedule, after Penn State, they don't play another ranked team. In fact, they don't really play another good team. They have Purdue, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Minnesota at home, Illinois, Nebraska. After Penn State, their next test may not be until the Big Ten title game, assuming they don't screw up or slip up along the way. If they can get past Saturday, Iowa has a bit of a cakewalk to the Big Ten championship. In fact, at that point, they could afford a loss and still make it to the Big Ten championship. And if they win the Big Ten with one loss, that still should be good enough to make the playoff. And with that defense, defense typically travels. Defense may not be as important as it once was in football, but we're seeing this year Alabama and Georgia, dominant defenses. Iowa, the 3rd-ranked team in the country right now, dominant defense. Even Penn State's number 4 team in the country. I still have questions about Sean Clifford and their offense, but their defense has been pretty good. Maybe the defense is making a return this year in college football. We know that early in the season, defense has had the advantage. The unders have hit a lot because the defense has actually had an offseason to get prepared. Right, for offense, you could do offense in the backyard of a coach's house. Offense is easy to run through. Right, in a walkthrough, what do? You walk through the offense. You could do it in a ballroom at the hotel you're staying at. You crumple up a piece of paper, you say, okay, here's the football, let's walk through our plays. You don't have to do it at full speed. Defense, a little bit different. To practice defense, to run your defense, to go up against a live offense in practice, that's a big difference. You can't get your defense out there in that same ballroom with a crumbled up piece of paper and say, okay, here's what we're going to do defensively. It just doesn't work as well. Because defense, a lot of it is reacting to the offense. And the offense is very much scripted, of course. You draw up your plays. Here's what we're going to do. We'll see how the defense reacts. And the defense, you're kind of guessing. And you know, we think this is what they're going to do. And if they do it, this is how we're going to respond. It's a little hard to do that if you can't have a normal practice or if you couldn't have physical contact during the pandemic and you had to keep kids 6 feet away. Defense is much improved this year. And Iowa has the next best defense right behind Georgia. I think that goes a long way. I think Iowa is the next best team in college football behind Georgia and Alabama. And even though they're 3rd in the rankings, I still don't think they get enough respect. 30,000 college football fans voted that Cincinnati is the 3rd best team in college football, which did surprise me. ESPN's computer model tells me Iowa is only the 5th best team in the Big Ten. I don't buy it. I think they're the 3rd best team in all of college football. Coming up, the one change Clemson could make here moving forward. We'll get to that next. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Oh,
coming up, the one change Clemson could make. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. This is one of my favorite songs to come out of, I don't know, call it this whole genre of music, I guess. Had to get a little extra Ronald Isley in there. And this song was used in, that Jeff Bridges movie. Now I'm drawing a blank. Bad Times at El Royale. That's what it's called, right? Which took place back in the 60s. Good film. Came out about 2 years ago. And one of the characters in the movie is a singer, and she sings this song, and it's really good. Great song from the Isley Brothers. If you listen to the Morrow Midday Show, you know how much I love the Isley Brothers. In fact, Tim Brando was on the Scott Hamilton Show, which you can catch here every morning from 10 to noon on ESPN Radio. This is going back about 2 weeks ago. And they got into the subject somehow about the best like R&B bands. And it's hard to really describe or differentiate the groups back then. If you want to put some in the funk category, soul, R&B, Motown, they're all very similar, those types of groups. And so Tim gave his Mount Rushmore of his four best R&B groups. And one of them was Tower of Power, which is a great pull. I don't know how many people would include Tower of Power on their Mount Rushmore. Great band. Often over. And Tower of Power had all sorts of they had like four, you know, NFL players in that band. The guy that was giving everybody steroids, who got busted for giving Barry Bonds steroids, he used to play keyboards. What was it, Victor Conti? Wasn't that his name from that whole steroid scandal 15 years ago with Bonds and everyone in Major League Baseball? He was like a keyboardist for Tower of Power back in the day. Anyways, Tim Brando included Tower of Power. Great choice. But he left off the Isley Brothers. So I got into a little debate with him on Twitter about, hey, Tower of Power, great inclusion. How can you forget the Isley Brothers? And he said the Isley Brothers are more funk than R&B. And I said, whoa, hold on. You're going to tell me there's a big difference between the Isley Brothers and Tower of Power? It's the same music. You're splitting hairs telling me funk and not R&B or soul and Motown and all this. You want to talk about the best bands from that era? You got to include the Isley Brothers. I forget who else was on his list. Tower of Power, The Spinners, I think The Temptations, I forget the fourth one. Wasn't a bad list, but you got to include the Isley Brothers. And that's a great song right there. Clemson's on their bye week this week. Comes at a good time. They could try to regroup. They could try to get healthy. They have Syracuse coming up afterwards. That's a bit of a get-right game. You know, oftentimes here on the show, we talk about people who have been able to adapt. And typically with Nick Saban, you have to adapt, you know, right? The Billy Beane expression, adapt or die. You either adapt or you fall behind. And Nick Saban gets a lot of credit for being willing to adapt. I always point to the pandemic over the past years that forced a lot of companies to have to adapt. And the ones that were able to are the ones that were fortunate enough to make it through the shutdown and the pandemic and the quarantines and all that sort of stuff. They're still operating. The restaurants who could adapt to become just a takeout restaurant, right? They were doing better. Or the ones in New York City that were able to come up with some outdoor seating on the sidewalk. You know, they're better off than some of the other restaurants. You can obviously point to Netflix. A lot of times there are companies that may not want to make a change, but realize they have to. Or a Yellow Pages. Right? Yellow Pages, all about the book. Certain people in the listenership right now may not be old enough to remember when you used to get the Yellow Pages and the White Pages. And, you know, now it's all online. Now you can get the app. The YP app, the Yellow Page app. It's all online. It's all digital. Same at Netflix. Originally, they used to mail you the DVDs. That's why Blockbuster went out of business, because they refused to adapt to the times. Then the whole streaming world came along. Netflix said, okay, we no longer have to mail DVDs. We're putting everything online. You can stream it right online. And Blockbuster said, no thanks. In fact, isn't the story that Blockbuster had a chance to buy into Netflix and the guy, whoever was owning Blockbuster, said, nope, we're good. And I don't think that idea is going to work. We like people coming to the store and picking out their VHS tapes. Well, we know how things worked out. Blockbuster quickly went out of business. Netflix is doing just fine. You have to adapt. Sometimes against your will or against your background. Right? You ever have a boss or maybe an employee, a new boss comes in and you want to do something a certain way and the boss is trying to change something and the employee says, yeah, but this is how we've always done it. Okay. Well, there may be a better way to do it. Nobody likes change, but sometimes it can be for the better. Now, I say all this because we know that Dabo Swinney is very anti-transfer portal. But I think it's time for Clemson to start dipping their toes into said transfer portal. We always want to compare Dabo to Nick Saban. It's the natural or obvious comparison. And the credit that Saban always gets is being able to adapt. Now, last week on the show on Friday, as we were gearing up for Alabama and Ole Miss, thinking that would be some sort of intriguing game, and it obviously was not, I said that you could take a real lesson from that game if you're Clemson. That all week long we were hearing the stories and they were reminiscing about the time Saban hired Lane Kiffin, brought him in, what it meant to the program. How even though they would butt heads and they didn't get along, Saban was still very much thankful for what Lane Kiffin brought to the program and then left with them after he moved on. Right? Turning that offense into something modern. Now creating an offense that produces first-round draft picks at the quarterback position year after year, something Alabama never did. And no longer was it just about defense. Now it's about a great offense. You can credit Lane Kiffin for that. And that was something that Nick Saban probably had to, you know, maybe, I don't know if he had to swallow his pride or if he had to go against his instincts. Maybe he was all in on that idea. I don't know. Right, maybe he had to, I wouldn't say force himself, but sometimes you do things that, you know, you're like, I don't know if this is the best move, or I don't know if this is a move I would typically make, but it's a move we kind of have to make. Right, sometimes you make decisions like that that you may not be completely comfortable with, but you realize it's the best thing for the company or the best thing for your family or you personally. And so for Clemson, similar idea now with the transfer portal. And maybe they think, yeah, you know, we're about loyalty here, or we're too good for the transfer portal. We don't know. Whatever the thought process is, I know Dabo doesn't like to use the transfer portal. But this offensive line has been a real problem for Clemson. This past transfer portal season, right, this offseason, there were four-star offensive linemen in said portal, right, an opportunity for Clemson to try to bring somebody in. They did not. Those four-star offensive linemen, one went to Oklahoma, one went to Notre Dame, one went to West Virginia, one went to TCU. Obviously good enough to play for some of those other big-time programs and go start there. Would they make all the difference in the world for Clemson? I don't know. Could they hurt? Nah, probably not. But you had four options right there in the transfer portal. Who wouldn't want to go play for Clemson? Four-star offensive linemen, and they went to other Power 5 programs, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, West Virginia, TCU. And I don't know if it's some sort of ego or pride thing. I don't know if it's this idea of, you know, we're too good for that. We don't need the transfer portal. That's for other programs that need to fill holes, right? We recruit well. We develop. We don't need to do that. I don't know. Maybe Clemson fans have that thought process, thinking, yeah, we don't need the transfer portal. We're fine, right? We bring in top five recruiting classes. Well, Alabama's top tackler this year transferred to the program. Their number two wide receiver this year transferred to the program. Georgia, the other top team in college football, yeah, four of their starters are transfers. And that doesn't include Eric Gilbert, who was supposed to be the starting tight end. And the two best programs in college football are relying on kids that they didn't actually directly recruit, that they brought in from the transfer portal. Clemson could easily do the same thing every year, take advantage of some more developed players out there looking for a fresh start, and of course would love to come play for Clemson. Would it fix all of their problems? No. But I think it would certainly help. It can't hurt. I think it's time for Clemson to start dipping the toes in the transfer portal. You know, in college basketball, things are changing so rapidly in college sports that we're seeing these college basketball coaches step away. They either go to the NBA, right, like Beilein, or they just completely retire, like Roy Williams and Coach K and Jim Boeheim's probably next. And the idea, the belief is that college basketball has changed so much with the transfer portal and you're always recruiting, and it's not the sport that they once fell in love with. So instead of adapting, they'd rather just leave. Instead of changing, now granted, most of these guys are older in years, try to have your grandfather change something he's done his entire life. Right? When you get to a certain point, you don't want to adapt. You don't want to change. You've been doing it your whole life that way. But a lot of these college basketball coaches specifically would rather just, I'll go do something else instead of adapt or change. Right? Blockbuster, instead of adapting, we're gonna keep doing it our way. We'll be fine. Not really. And for Clemson, you look around, everyone else is taking advantage. Alabama went out and found some of their best players in the transfer portal, even though they always bring in top recruiting classes. Right? Georgia brought in multiple starters. If everything worked out, they'd have five starters this year at minimum from the transfer portal. Those other schools that needed offensive line help, they got one in the transfer portal. Oklahoma, Notre Dame, West Virginia, TCU. Why not Clemson as well? Right? There's really no good reason not to take advantage of it. One of the changes in college football, now you should take advantage of it. Just like name, image, and likeness, you can use that to your advantage. Transfer portal, you can use that to your advantage. I don't see the negative in it. Now, can you do it right now, midseason? No, it can't help you. It's not like a trade deadline in the NFL. You can't, we need a quarterback, let's go out and trade for one. It's not how it works. But moving forward in the offseason, right, when you go into the season and you think like, ooh, our offensive line's pretty inexperienced, and we got a young quarterback back there, and we got some freshman running backs, well, why not, let's go grab a junior in the transfer portal who's played at another school, who's a four-star recruit looking for a fresh start. We could bring him in. He's a little bigger. He's a little more mature. He's played at the college football level. He could speed up the process a little bit. I think that could be helpful. I think it's time to adapt to that. You may not want to. You may not like where things are going, but sometimes you have to adapt or you fall behind. Maybe Clemson in that area is falling behind. Georgia and Alabama's taking advantage. Maybe Clemson needs to as well. We'll wrap up Hour 1 when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Are we really happy here? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. This type of music, like the Isley Brothers last segment, a little George Benson, this is good for like a rainy day. Rainy Tuesday, you're driving around. Something a little relaxing or calming. I don't have to worry about it so much here. You know, we don't have to worry about winters. But that's what I always said. Once it starts to get cold, that's when I listen to more Motown. Motown is always good for when it's cold out, you put on the Spinners. When it's, you know, on a snowy day and you just relax with some hot chocolate. Don't have to worry about that around here. But on a rainy day, we've had plenty of those lately. Something like this could be a little soothing as you drive around in the rain. Stay safe out there. Coming up, we'll get ready for the Major League Baseball postseason. Next hour, we'll dive into the baseball. You know, this time of year when football begins, you can kind of forget about the baseball season. It can kind of take a back seat. But we have playoff baseball beginning tonight. The Atlanta Braves will start play this weekend. So we'll get into all that next hour. Get ready for the baseball playoffs. Tell you, I'm ready. I got my Red Sox jersey on. I got my Red Sox water bottle here. See how things go tonight. I'm already sweating it out. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
Where's the game go play that with Braves? Let's go beat Boston.
Yes, tonight at Fenway Park, Red Sox Yankees.
You know, if you're familiar with Boston weather, it might get cold over there.
Yes, it could be tonight.
Yep, so Braves got to get used to that when they play the weekend.
Hey, nothing says playoff baseball, though, like, you know, like some frigid October air.
Yeah, but they get kind of late with this. They got to get with this World Series.
Yeah, you think the season goes too long in baseball? You wish it would end a little sooner?
It should be already the World Series.
Already the World Series?
Huh?
You think it should already be the World Series?
Yeah. In October, it should already get the World Series going.
So how many? They play 162 games. How many games do you think they should play then to get the season done with, you know, early enough?
You think it should be like 160, let's say 164 games.
You want to add games? They do 162 now. You want to go to 164?
Oh, they go on 162 now, right?
Yeah, 162.
Well, they should go 154.
Okay,
you know?
So you want to go back, to the 154, like the old days.
Yeah, you want to get to... get to be able to play less ball. It's like racing goes too long. It goes like already to, what is it, November 31st.
Uh-huh.
And they don't have much time off to enjoy their family with Christmas either.
Right.
So, you know, unless the weather changes, you know, then they might, you know, get, you know, November, if it snows in that month, then they may not be able to race, you know.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
It's crazy year this year. You don't know what it's going to do, you know.
That's so true. It's been some crazy weather. Now, you have I'm a little nervous about tonight, so I need you to look into that crystal ball. We got the Yankees at the Red Sox tonight at Fenway Park tonight at 8:08. Who do you think? It's a one-game elimination. Who do you think wins tonight?
It'll be Boston Red Sox win, so that could be wrong.
Oh.
I think the weather's going to be in their camp.
Yeah?
Because if it gets cold over there, then the Braves ain't going to win too great. So they're not used to cold weather.
Okay.
You know?
You got a score for me? What do you think? What are we looking at a high-scoring game tonight? We're looking at a pitcher's duel. What do you think?
I think it's going to be a pitcher's duel, like 3-1.
Okay. So you give me a Red Sox win tonight, 3-1.
Yep.
All right.
That's it.
All right, Super Dave, I hope you're right. Looked into that crystal ball, came back with a 3-1 victory for the Red Sox tonight. I hope so. Otherwise, it's going to be a tough Wednesday tomorrow. Let me tell you. Good to have playoff baseball back. That's why October is the best time of the year. NBA preseason's already beginning. College basketball's around the corner. College basketball, they've begun practicing. We're right in the middle of a football season. And then you get playoff baseball thrown in as well. Begins tonight with the Red Sox Yankees on ESPN, 8:08 first pitch. The Braves will play this weekend against the Brewers. That's a tough matchup. Now, of course, when it comes to baseball, there's always plenty to complain about. Next hour, I'll air some grievances as we wind down the baseball season. We head into the postseason. Some grievances about Major League Baseball. And every Tuesday, we do a top 10 list. While the playoffs begin tonight, we have 10 playoff teams in baseball. So why not power rank them? We will order the 10 playoff teams in terms of who has the best chance to win the World Series this year in Major League Baseball. And we'll do that coming up. We'll also catch up with Jared Diamond later on this afternoon to talk about the baseball playoffs as we get ready to go. It all begins tonight, and we'll break it down next. Hour 2 coming up. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.